Hello and welcome to another episode of Football Memories and Moments. It's a bit of a one-off episode, this, that we've decided to bring forward. We were hoping to include this at some point during Series 4, but we've decided to bring it out this week ahead of the playoffs. And that's because we're joined by Jen Offord. Jen is a podcaster, she's a presenter, she's a sports journalist as well. She's written for Eurosport and she presents quite a lot of podcasts for Standard Issue. And the reason why we've decided to bring this forward this week is because Jen is a Charlton fan, and we're going to talk about the season that leads up to probably one of the greatest playoff finals ever. And as you will probably know, the same playoff final is going to be repeated this weekend when Charlton take on Sunderland. A big fan of Jen, you know, she very much was famous in 2012 as someone who tried to take on as many of the Olympic sports as she could. And I think our chat at the end does include something along the lines of talking about women's sport participation. It's been a while since I spoke to Jen because external factors have taken hold of where we are in terms of getting Series 4 out, which we are hopefully aiming to do at some point soon. But it was really great to speak to her, and I hope you enjoy it too. So here we go.
Okay, so the memory that I'm going to talk about is, it's not really like one memory as such. It is an overarching story about the year 1998 and why it was significant to me in terms of football. And there are a few reasons for this. So a bit of background information for you. So I grew up, I'm the youngest of three, and I grew up with two older brothers who obviously were both, you know, football mad as young boys tend to be. I can't say that really, can I? Not all boys. Hashtag not all boys. Anyway, they were football mad, and even my eldest brother supported West Ham, and Michael kind of flitted around for a little while between teams. So we were originally from South East London, but we moved out to Essex when I was about six. So a number of teams were supported by my brother. We're quite close to Ipswich. So I think there was a time when we both supported Ipswich. I'm glad that passed. And for a while, I supported Manchester United. That's because of Mark Owen, though. There's no other reason, and I'm glad that passed as well. Although it probably would have made me a lot happier in the long run. Anyway, so my brother settled on Charlton Athletic, and in a town full of Ipswich Town supporters, basically, I think I thought it would make me quite exotic to support Charlton Athletic. So that is the team I eventually settled on. And I had always had like a passing interest in football. I remember watching some FA Cup match. I remember being about eight and there was some FA Cup match on the telly. And for some reason, it was Man United playing. For some reason, I knew who Dion Dublin was. I don't know why I knew who he was specifically, but I knew who he was. And he came on to play for Manchester United in this game, and I commented, oh, it's Dion Dublin or whatever. And I remember one of my parents' friends was there, and he looked at me with some sort of surprise, like, how do you know who Dion Dublin is? And I think he actually said, what, how do you know who Dion Dublin is? And I was just like, I don't know, just do. I liked how surprised he was that I knew it, because I was a contrary little shit basically. So I was like, great, I can surprise people by knowing about football. And so that's sort of like where it started. And also, you've got two older brothers. They want to watch football on TV, and basically you're stuck with it. So you can either go, okay, well, I'll just get involved in this, or you can go, well, I'll just go and play on my own. And that's a bit miserable. So I decided to get involved with the football. So 1998 was significant because when we lived in Charlton when I was a kid, Charlton actually, they'd gone bankrupt, and we live quite close to the Valley, Charlton's grounds, obviously. And but they weren't playing there at the time. I think there was like a tree growing in the middle of the pitch and like gypsies living there or something like that. I mean, like actual gypsies as opposed to, I don't mean that obviously as a term of abuse because I'm not an arsehole. But so there were people like actually sort of camped on the pitch and stuff like that. And my brothers used to sort of, I think I can probably say this enough times past. My brothers used to like break into the box office and stuff and steal programs and things like that in this abandoned place. So Charlton had always been sort of significant, but they were like, they were going through this wonderful period under Alan Kirbishley of just edging closer. They were in what was then League One, obviously is now the Championship. They were going through this glorious period of edging ever closer to getting into the Premier League. And I think maybe they'd had a few disappointments in the years sort of around then. I think maybe they'd been in playoffs before. I can't really remember. But then this year, it all just sort of clicked into place under the influence of the wonderful Clive Mendonca. And we got into the playoffs. And it was a really, like, it was a really lovely kind of year because we didn't have Sky TV in my house when we were growing up. And also they wouldn't have been showing those matches anyway, I don't think, because no one gave a shit about League One. And so, am I allowed to swear, by the way?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I think it's a bit late for that now, but
I know, it's happened, but I just suddenly thought I'd better say to you a terrible edit. And why Manekin if it's not okay?
No, it's fine.
But basically, what we used to do was, so I was revising for my, I must have been in year 10 at that point, and revising for my GCSEs, and my brother is 2 years older than me, must have been in his first year of A-levels and revising for that. And what we used to do on a Saturday was, this is how long ago this was. We used to go and like get all our coursework and sit in the living room and put Five Live on and teletext and just like watch the match and listen to the match like that. So I remember, like, I don't know, I have a real affection for random punditry expressions now, because obviously you've got to fill the time somehow, haven't you?
And if
not a lot is going on, which I imagine quite often there wasn't that much going on in a Charlton Athletic League One match, there'd be a lot of chat about socks and things like that. So be like, oh, it's a cream affair today, some cream coloured socks on, things like that.
I remember Charlton used to have when they were the Cox Sportif, was it? They didn't have a cream colour kit. And also, I think you've just sent a tear of emotion down anyone over the age, I'd say about 30. The days of having to watch all your football on teletext. I once watched an entire one day international against India. I'd say this was in 97. I watched the entire thing on ball by ball teletext. I generally got rid of 7 hours of my day like that. And you know what, Jen? I wouldn't have changed that for a minute. So just coming back to it then. So Charlton, as you say, because you despite them not being at the Valley when you were growing up and you were there, in their time they spent at Selhurst Park like Wimbledon did. You know, Selhurst Park seems to be the ground for the wandering clubs. Do you think then, and maybe I'm putting too much into this and maybe I'm trying to romanticise this a bit too much, but do you think your decision to support them on the basis of being contrary, but also do you just think it might have just been in your blood? Do you think it could have just been destiny? Has that thought ever crossed your mind?
Destiny. Well, I mean, it makes sense, doesn't it? I think that the place where I grew up was a very, very small town. And I think the idea of like being from London was sort of quite exciting. And I think, yeah, I guess it just makes sense. I mean, the thing about Charlton is everyone knows, I believe that everyone knows one Charlton Athletic supporter, basically. I know a few, and I'm not even related to all of them. And they're not even people I met on Twitter, you know, by following Charlton Athletic. But I don't know. I think Charlton, obviously, it's all gone a bit wrong in recent years. It's all been a bit controversial with the ownership and their, I'm going to say their communication strategy has not been great. But it's like, it's just a nice club, isn't it? I feel like when you, because I love the Premier League, right? I genuinely love it. I really enjoy it. But I enjoy it from the perspective of someone who doesn't really care what happens.
Yeah,
I'm not invested in the end result. I like to see, I live in sort of North East London now. I like to see, I'm a non-partisan North Londoner, as I always say. I like to see Spurs do well. I like to see Arsenal do well because they're my now local clubs. But I don't really care who wins.
Yeah.
I just like the story arcs, basically. I like the way things unfold. Like Jose Mourinho has been a fantastic story arc over the last few seasons. Will he ever be again? I don't know. But that's by the by, isn't it? So what am I saying? What am I saying? So basically, so I like to have conversations with people, for example, who support Manchester United and say stuff like, well, I hate Man U, because I can. And then they go, oh, yeah, who do you support then? And I go, Charlton Athletic. And the reaction is always like, oh, that's nice. As opposed to like, oh, I hate you. So, which would be a strong reaction, to be fair.
I think if Charlton were even in the same league still, they would still not rise above much more than a pat on the head or I hope you beat this team, but the likes of those clubs aren't really gonna be too worried about them. So it's kind of like you're saying that you've got this nice position of being able to enjoy high level football without the pressure because you kind of have your club stashed away where you kind of want it to be almost. Is that a fair thing to say?
Absolutely. They're somewhere in the back of my mind causing me misery if I think about them too much. So consequently, I don't think about them as much as I should do, or I haven't done in recent years because it's been hard for Charlton Athletic supporter in recent years because it has been, you know, you've gone from that kind of like, oh, Charlton Athletic, oh, that's nice, to sort of like, oh, yeah, poor you. That's a bit messy. But hopefully we're coming out of that now and, you know, we're actually doing quite well at the moment. So fingers crossed.
Just to talk about this aspect of doing quite well, and again, I find it interesting. I'm going to say this about this particular individual, but you know, you have to be fair to people. But Charlton's regaining its soul it's sort of piece by piece, I think. Mm. And Bowyer's playing, Lee Bowyer's, you know, it's interesting that he hasn't signed the contract, or he didn't sign a contract when he initially came back, and that sort of thing. Is it important that people like him, regardless of what you think of Lee Bowyer because of the things that's happened throughout his career, is it important that people like him who know the club inside out are the ones to steer it through back towards where it needs to be?
I think it's interesting because when I, in 1998, when I have my sort of football awakening, if you will, so I think Lee Bowyer played for us back then, and also the Right Honourable Chris Powell. I would rather he was the one steering us back to glory. You know, I really enjoyed it when Chris Powell was managing us and we were doing all right. And I think it was sad that he left in the circumstances he did. Also, you know, with the miserable Roland I can't say his name. Duchatelet? Don't know.
Yeah. As I say, we don't do research here, Jen. Don't worry about it.
I mean, it's a shame because obviously we went through about 10,000 managers in a few years under this guy who owns us. And it would have been nice to see Chrissy Powell given a bit more of a chance. But yeah, I do think there's something in that. And I think that also when I look at Manchester United at the moment, I kind of think, yeah, and it's happened for a number of clubs, hasn't it? When they've sort of had their their moment of bringing back someone from, you know, former glory, and then they've sort of done amazing things for the club. Sort of fairly common, I think. But yeah, I mean, obviously, Bowie is a bit of a problematic character, shall we say?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
So taking it back to 98, then we'll go back to that happy place, which is what the aim of this pod is going to be. So how did that season? So why was that year? And we'll come on to it. I know we're going to come on to it in a moment. But why was that year your awakening, and why specifically Charlton season? We've covered why you support Charlton, but why that Charlton season acted as your awakening?
Because I don't know, it was the first time I was sort of fully immersed in it, where I think football, I think sport in general, you've got to give people a reason to care, haven't you? So, you know, as much as you can appreciate like a beautiful goal or whatever, you have to have a reason to care. And Charlton gave me a reason to care that season, because they were on the cusp of greatness, shall we say, or about as great as Charlton can get. And so we got into the playoffs for a place in the Premier League, and that was obviously hugely significant. And I just remember, like, the stakes felt so high sitting there, you know, with teletext on in front of us. The stakes felt really high, and I hadn't actually even seen Charlton play at that point. I didn't go to see them play until the following year, basically because the only other person I knew that wanted to see Charlton Athletic play was my brother, who said he wouldn't take me with him because, and I quote, "I would ask too many questions." Thanks, Michael. And then the next year he had to take me because I bought him a birthday present for his 18th birthday that he was drunk and really rude about. And also he had been bought tickets to see Charlton. And in the cold light of day, when he considered how rude he'd been to me, he felt quite bad. So he said, "Do you want to have the other ticket for the Charlton match?"
What did you get him?
Do you know what? It does sound a bit whack now when I think about it. But, you know, I was young. I got him. I knew he was getting these Charlton tickets, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, we can have a nice day out in London. And bearing in mind, this is... So when did he... So that would have been 1999. So bearing in mind, he was going to have a lovely day out in London to watch Charlton play. And so I bought him... Was it 1999? Have I made that up?
It'd be 98 or 99. Yeah, because that was the Premier League season.
But it must have been his 18th birthday, but I feel like... No, this was later. I didn't go and see them play until 2001.
So it'd be his 21st.
Yeah, it must have been his 21st, with that in mind, this is an even worse birthday present, to be fair. So I bought him tickets to go on the London Eye. Because I thought he'd have a lovely day out in London. He could go on the London Eye and then he could go and watch Charlton play. Anyway, he was really rude about that present. And now thinking about it, 21st birthday, sorry, Michael.
But, I mean, he possibly could have seen the valley from the top of the London Eye. Yeah,
well, know. Exactly. But as it transpired, when we went, so I was at university at the time, so was he. So I came and I met him in London. And as it transpired, I was really... He said, "I hate London and I hate heights." When I thought, "Oh, you popped this right up." I was a bit upset because I honestly thought it was a good present, like thoughtful, you know.
Yeah.
And apparently not. And then what happened was when it was a really like grey day, I was desperately hungover and I hated every second of the London Eye. And he was like, "Oh, that was lovely. I really enjoyed it." And I don't even think he was lying to save my feelings at that point. Anyway, we saw Charlton play. And I think we drew, and I can't remember who it was against. But anyway, because what had happened was, I think, I'm not going to say this because I could be wrong, so you might have to edit this bit.
Okay.
So 1998, Charlton Athletic. So what happened was we got through the playoff stages and then we got to the final, basically, of the playoffs, which was at Wembley Stadium, the mm-hmm. old one, you know. So big news, Charlton Athletic, Wembley Stadium. And we were against Sunderland. And again, I didn't actually see this match because my brother got to go to the pub to watch it because he was 17, but I was 15, so I wasn't getting away with that, basically. So again, it was like five live teletext. But it was like absolutely nail-biting because it ended up going to a penalty shootout. And it was...
Sorry, Jen, can I just stop? The connection just dipped out ever so slightly there.
Okay.
So I lost you at... So can you go back and start with... You didn't watch this on teletext.
Okay.
And then we'll go from there again. Sorry.
Right, yeah, no worries. So, I didn't get to watch this match because I was 15. My brother was 17. He got to go to the pub, but I wasn't getting away with that because I was 15. So he went and watched it in the pub and I had to do the whole, like, watching it on teletext and listening to Five Live again. And it was absolutely nail-biting because it went to a penalty shootout, basically. Like, Clive Mendonca had scored twice. I can't remember what the scoreline was. I'm going to look this up.
He got three because it finished 3-3 in the game.
Did he score one of those?
He got... He scored three. So he finished 4-4 because Richard Rufus scored the other.
Yeah, Richard Rufus.
Right, which I always thought was a fantastic name.
Yeah. Yeah. Hang on a minute. So what happened to that? It was 3-3. It was 3-3 after 90 minutes. Then it was 4-4 extra time. And then it was decided on penalties. Now, so Clive Mendonca... Clive Mendonca scored a hat-trick.
Yeah.
Right? Clive Mendonca scored a hat-trick at Wembley Stadium. Think about that. Think about that sentence.
I mean, it could be something that we could ask one of our former guests and someone you probably follow on Twitter, Duncan Alexander, who is the head of Opta. But he surely must be the only Clive in the history of football at Wembley Stadium to have scored a hat-trick.
Well, let me tell you my fake fact.
Go on.
Which I went around telling people for years, not knowing it was fake, very much thinking it was a true fact. It's not, as it transpires. Clive Mendonca is one of three people to have scored a hat-trick at Wembley Stadium. It's not true.
It's not true.
It's categorically untrue. But I only found this out about 2 years ago. And I have been telling people this for years. And people are like, shit, really? That's amazing. But like, regardless, just think about that. Clive Mendonca had his moment, you know, his chance to shine, and he scored a hat-trick at Wembley Stadium. And also, because Clive Mendonca is from the Northeast originally, I believe he may even be a Sunderland fan, and he apparently received death threats afterwards.
You're kidding me.
No.
Yeah, he was born in Sunderland.
Yeah. And they were not happy about that, about one of their own doing that to them. But anyway, so then there was a penalty shootout. Really, really tense stuff. And Charlton ended up winning 7-6 on penalties after Michael Gray missed.
Who still gets shit about it?
Does he?
Yeah, it's still someone. Still, it's I think people on Twitter because it's on Sky have like, you know, football golden moments, or you know, because they've lost all their sport now, and so they have to come up with all these programs to fill the schedule, and they do football moments or football golden is the 98 playoff final, and Michael Gray was the one who Lionel Perez was in goal. I think Lionel Perez was in goal for Sunderland.
And and I remember, because it was a boiling hot day, 25th of May.
Yeah.
And it would have been on bank holiday Monday as well.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I remember it. I remember it well, despite not actually having seen it. But it was like, this was huge, because, you know, we were promoted to the Premier League. This is massive. And there was a bit of, you know, local rivalry. We used to, you know, sort of, there was a lot of bants, you might say, between us and the Ipswich Town fans. Incredible.
Because of that, the point I just want to quickly raise on that, obviously, we haven't looked at, for yourself and for Michael, is that the playoff semi-final was against
Ipswich. Yeah, of course. I'd completely forgotten. Yeah, it was against Ipswich. Because we were in the same league for a lot of the time. So there was always a bit of like, yeah, it was, you know, so it was well documented within the town that we were Charlton Athletic supporters. So there was always a bit of like, yeah, bants. And yeah, we beat Ipswich, and that was huge. We knew a lot of Ipswich Town fans, which, you know, not that many people get to say. But yeah, so it was massive. So we were promoted to the Premier League. And then, now I need to sort of think about this for a minute, because I think we got relegated almost immediately the next year. Did we get relegated the next year? And then we got promoted again the year after that, I think.
I can't remember if, as I say, we don't do research, but I think we do need to find this out.
Yeah.
I think I'm off the top of my head, and I hope I'm wrong, I think this was the season that you bounced back.
Yes, I think you're right. I think what happened was we were immediately relegated the next season, and then we came straight back up again. Yeah, that's right, because then I went to see them in 2001 with my brother for the first time. And I think that was post-bounce back, I think.
That does make sense, because I went to watch Charlton Everton that, like, the year they came up, because 98 was my first year at university in London. And we got over there, and we went without a ticket, but we didn't get in. But I always remember us having really bad record at your place as well, which used to annoy me. I always remember Joseph Yobo. You beat us 4-2. And Joseph Yobo gave a goal away when he was pulling up his socks while someone was having a shot. Which, you know, was classic Everton, really. Yeah, just looking at it, you finished second bottom from that season.
Yeah.
But then you stormed back. So your first season, you would have finished, you finished ninth, which, did you think, like anyone, so what, in 2001, that would have been your first year uni, so what, 18?
Yeah, I was 19.
So yeah. Do you think then that you're, did you fool yourself into thinking, oh, it's going to be like this forever?
No, I think, like, I don't think anyone was that surprised that we got relegated. And I remember I think my brother actually cried when we got relegated. I'm pretty sure he cried. He won't thank me for saying that, but, you know. I said to him, it's going to be fine, because we're just going to, like, you know, we're going to, like, bounce back up again. And he was really upset. He's like, no, because we're going to have to sell all our good players. And we did have to sell quite a lot of our players, I think. Because people forget, we had some good players, actually. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so then, obviously, we did bounce back up again. And then after a few seasons, I did kid myself into thinking, this is it now. We're an established Premier League side. We're all going to be fine. And then, of course, it wasn't fine.
I mean, you finished in 2003-2004, you finished seventh.
Did we?
You finished seventh on 53 points. Now, if you think about it now, because of the lack of the, you know, big teams win all the cups now, that seventh would get you into Europe.
Yeah.
Could you imagine you ever going on a European tour with Charlton?
I'd love that to happen. I would love to see us hit the qualifying stage of the Europa League. That would be beautiful. And I feel like sort of fitting of the level of, you know, what you could realistically expect as the top of Charlton's game. I don't think, obviously, we won't see that for a very long time, if indeed it does ever happen. I remember, obviously, the very sad thing that happened was in 2006, Kurbishley left after, I don't know, I think 15 years in charge. And that seems to be where it all started to go wrong, basically.
Yeah.
For Charlton. That and the sale of Darren Bent for an unfeasible amount of money to Spurs. Yeah. And then, obviously, we've never looked back at being good since then. We've just slid into the abyss. But, you know, fingers crossed, Lee Bowyer is going to sort it all out for us. So this was huge. And I've just actually seen this described somewhere as one of the, as this playoff final as being one of the most thrilling matches ever to be played at Wembley. So, you know, just saying, guys. Anyone who's being sniffy about Charlton Athletic. Obviously, having discovered this newfound kind of passion for football, it was, of course, in that year, also a World Cup. So this is, you know, this was significant, basically, because I watched a lot of that World Cup with my brothers. And I think, like, I kind of developed a bit of an affection for Arsenal then, I think, because as I recall, at that time, Arsenal's team was, they had a lot of England players, but they also had a lot of France players. So they were actually quite good then. They played like quite good football. So I watched a lot of this with my brothers, and I remember them explaining the offside rule to me with using like some debris on a table, so like an apple core and a yogurt pot and things like that. And turns out it's not that complicated.
who was off then? Was the yoghurt offside or was the apple core offside?
I can't remember. I just remember them moving, you know. I just remember the action of them moving and that being how it's demonstrated. I can't remember who was offside. If I had to guess, I'd say the apple core, but I can't back that up, I'm afraid.
Controversial.
Controversial, yeah. So yeah, basically we watched a lot of that and they explained various things to me and it gave me a lot of fodder for chatting about football because I watched a lot of people saying a lot of things and then found it wasn't that hard to regurgitate what other people had said and make it look like I knew some stuff. I didn't really know anything at all. So yeah, and I remember the final. That was very exciting. Obviously, no one really wanted France to win, or I didn't. I don't think I really cared that much, to be honest. But yeah, I remember the whole tournament. I remember also my parents had gone away over that summer. And my brother had, like, taken the PlayStation into the living room, you know, kind of thing you can get away with when mum and dad aren't there to say, I'd actually like to watch TV now. Anyway, and he had FIFA 1998, FIFA World Cup 1998. And we played a tournament of this, right? And I am not a gamer. I never have been. And I'm very much of the school of, like, hit loads of buttons quickly and hope for the best.
Sorry. Are there other ways to play it?
There's, like, stuff, isn't there?
Yeah, it really moves. That's all things. I do. That's all I move. My nephew does moves on me, and I remind him I'm considerably bigger and older than him. So he just continues to pass the ball. And I know bullying is not allowed, but you know, just get on with it.
All's fair in love and faith. So basically, yeah, so Michael had to help me. He had to be England, obviously, because it was his game. I can't remember who I was. I think I might have been France, actually. Controversial.
Is that why you didn't want them to win?
Because I can't crap imagine. You on FIFA. Hang on, maybe I was Brazil. Maybe I was Brazil because I knew they were good. Can't remember. Or maybe he was Brazil and I had to be England. No, he must have been England. Anyway, so what happened was he had to get me through the entire... So he had this grand plan. We're going to get through this tournament and then we'll have to play each other in the final, right? He had to help me through every single stage of it because I didn't really know what I was doing so that we could meet in the final for this big showdown. And then I fucking beat him. Beat him in the final.
How did he take that?
He was livid. I don't think he's ever forgiven me. He was absolutely livid. He was so angry. And you know, when you're just a bit like, I mean, I didn't even try to do that. Like, there's no way I could have anticipated this being the outcome. I didn't even try to make that happen. So you know, when you're kind of like, well, this is sort of funny, really. I've got to laugh because there's no way I could have planned this. And he was furious, really, really upset with me. Anyway, so obviously this is, you know, this is sort of what was going on at that time. And I remember, like, I really, really enjoyed that World Cup so much. And I, like, you know, anyone who likes football loves a World Cup, but I really, really love a World Cup. And it all started there with that yogurt pot and that apple core and that faithful FIFA tournament.
And then, obviously, as we've been speaking before we start recording, it led to... Was this the first World Cup where... I'm trying to... So you would have been... You'd have 94, so you wouldn't have had any interest because England went there.
No, I remember 1990 because my brother had an England shell suit, which is like, you know, I remember at the time that was basically as cool as you could be.
I think Mundial, hello lads, I think Mundial are possibly, I think they've tried to resell them during last summer. I think they are more available than you think they are. And because obviously, for those of you who follow you on Twitter, you changed your picture for the World Cup, I think, didn't you?
Well, I changed it from one that was, I had basically every tournament, I take another photo of myself in the, so that's not a shell suit, that's just the shirt.
Yeah,
from 90. He had the shell suit. So he had that shirt in 1990. He would have been, how old would he have been? He would have been 10 or 11 then. God knows how big it must have been on him because I'm 36 and that T-shirt fits me quite comfortably.
I think that just says a lot about you then, more than him.
I'm not a small person. Like, I'm relatively tall. So, yeah, my brother was relatively tall as well. But, like, Christ knows how big that T-shirt was, but yeah, it still fits me. And I change my Twitter profile every time we have an international tournament to a picture of me. Basically, it shows the aging process. And
is it the modern day equivalent of whenever you grew growing up, you just mark a little notch on one of the door frame, wouldn't you? And but that World Cup, but in an English shirt, yeah. But that 98 World Cup obviously has one of the most famous moments in. You know, Beckham, what are your memories of Beckham sending off? That was because, you know, talking, that was kind of what was stood out for you, really.
Oh, yeah. So I think that was my first football heartbreak. I think that was because, obviously, I'd had this great time with Charlton that year. We just had the playoff final. We'd been promoted, as previously discussed. And I think this is the first time... I do remember the Euros in 96. I do remember going out in the Euros in 96. And I remember that being, like, you know, something that you know, no one was happy about it. I remember like it being a thing that like, oh yeah, that's rubbish. This is the first time I was like, oh no, like that sort of means something to me. So obviously David Beckham was a naughty boy. He wasn't that naughty really, was he?
No, Simeone made an absolute meal of it, but it was the thing that changed everything, wasn't it? And I mean, where, because obviously you would have been able to have watched this with it being on BBC or ITV.
Yeah. That's what I actually watched, yeah.
So where were you? When did you watch it?
I watched it with my two brothers in my brother's bedroom, because he was the oldest and he had the biggest room and he had a telly in it, which was, you know, like big news to a 15-year-old. And I imagine my mum had said, "You're absolutely not watching it down here. I don't care." So we watched it in my brother's bedroom. And I had been doing work experience that week in London. And I remember like hurrying home to watch it. And I remember London being absolutely dead. Because I was, where was I? It was like basically near Oxford Street that I was doing this work experience. And yeah, London was absolutely dead. And I remember, you know, prior to that, there'd been like a bit of a hubbub, bit of excitement around town, whatever. I got home and I watched it with my brothers. And I remember a decent shot in that World Cup. Like it's one of the World Cups where it's one of the international tournaments where you feel like we could have had a decent crack at that, actually. We had a good team, we were doing all right. And then, yeah, just disaster, heartbreak. And I remember Beckham was like public enemy number one afterwards.
I think he was possibly number two, three and four as well.
Yeah.
The abuse he got afterwards was horrendous.
Yeah.
I mean, not, you know, again, we've discussed this, but not that I remember too much. It was my 18th birthday, and I don't remember much. I don't remember the second half. I don't remember Beckham getting sent off, but I do remember Owen scoring and the penalties. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the actual Beckham sending off, what was the reaction of your brothers? What was your reaction to the actual sending off?
I'm not sure I fully appreciated what it meant, because this is quite early on in my football career, if you will, career as a football spectator. I'm not sure I fully understood what it meant. My brothers were like, this is the worst thing ever. Like, this is just absolute disaster, basically. And I remember that really like mournful stroll off the pitch, Beckham with his head, his head lowered, and it was just like, I just remember it was awful. But then we were, but we did quite well to stay in the game beyond that.
We did. Well, do you remember that, I'm trying to remember, I think it was Campbell, Sol Campbell had the goal disallowed in extra time. And we actually had the chance to win it.
Yeah. So, I have the feeling that this was it on ITV?
I think so, yeah. Which is why I built up my dislike of watching England games.
Where my dislike for watching England games on ITV stems from, because I have a feeling it was either this one or another one. Great knowledge, Jen. I have a feeling that Kevin Keegan was the pundit, was like the one of the commentators at the time.
He might have been.
He certainly said during one England match, quite late on in the game, he said, "There's only one team's going to win this now," and it was not England. And the implication had very much been, "It's going to be England," and we didn't. And I, apart from like the other vapid sentiments expressed,
that could have been the Romania game.
Yeah,
was that? Am I getting confused with Euro 2000 with when Phil Neville gave away a penalty? That could have been Euro 2000 when Kevin Keegan was actually, ironically, the manager of England.
No. Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I think it was this game, but it could have been another one. And Kevin Keegan said, "Is anyone thinking to win this now?" And we, I remember thinking, "You prick, you made that happen."
I mean, it's good to think, Jen, that you know, despite being quite new to the to football, that you've nailed the completely random and illogical responses to people reasons for why your team have lost. You seem to have nailed that quite early on. You know, blaming Kevin Keegan for being overconfident for the whole reason why England lost. I mean, that's quite logical, really, isn't it?
You've got to. If you support England, I think you have to, you know, find your coping strategy. And obviously, I was a little bit ahead there. But yeah, it was awful. It was awful. And then I remember London the next day, because obviously I had to go back and finish my work experience. It was just the misery. I just remember all the newspaper boards and stuff, and it was all just like, you know, Beckham, yeah, public enemy number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever, with, you know, Simeone in, I don't know, 8th, something like that. Yeah, just miserable. And it was the first time, I really understood how miserable football could be. Forward to at the end of that summer. So, you know.
For one year.
But I do remember, I'm pretty sure it was that time round. I think we beat Chelsea on Boxing Day. Something like that. I think it was that year. I think we beat Chelsea on Boxing Day. And for a time, we were, because Charlton had this miserable tradition of playing quite well up to Christmas. And then just after that, I think they just go, well, we're not going to get relegated now. It's all right. Don't worry about it. And
that is what they were famous for. And that's why Kerr famously never got a job anywhere else, because other than the West Ham job, which is the one he'd obviously always wanted. Mm. But yeah, it was always down to that.
No winning mentality.
Yeah. It was down to the fact that he couldn't motivate the players after they were safe, after they reached the magical 40 points. So just to wrap it up and round it up, Jen, what do you think your relationship with football like is now? Because famously, I think you had this thing with sport in 2012.
Yeah.
About the idea of taking on more sports, and did that broaden your love for all sports, or has it just made you love football even more?
And so what happened was, after that, I wrote a blog about trying all the Olympic sports, which is sort of how I come to be in the situation I am now, where I do a bit of, you know, freelance sports journalism, and obviously the Standard Issue podcast, and I cover the sport for that. And I think the thing, so again, this kind of goes back to, I think you have to have a reason to care about sport. And I think that sport is kind of sold to, I think the way that men think about sport, hashtag not all men, but I think a lot of people think about sport in kind of like very stats heavy sort of technical kind of ways. I don't really care about that sort of stuff. I mean, obviously everyone loves a stat, obviously, especially one that is incorrect about Clive Mindonca and hat-tricks at Wembley Stadium. But I think that I think what that experience gave me was an understanding of what there was to care about, if you see what I mean. Yeah. I met all of these people who were working at like grassroots level, a few, you know, actual real life athletes and stuff, but a lot of people working at grassroots level who just really loved their sport. They just really, really loved their sport, and they were so happy to help you because they wanted you to love their sport in the way that they did. And I think that, yeah, it gave me a reason to care about sport and to kind of understand that it's just like, really, it's just a sort of microcosm of the rest of the universe. You know, the same issues that you see in the world are reflected in a sort of smaller way in sport. And I think football at the moment is really interesting because obviously the rise of the women's game, and we're starting to see things like more female pundits on the telly, and you know, the conversation about that last week with I don't know when this is going out, but with Jake Humphrey and Rachel Finns-Brown on BT Sport and things like that. I feel like it's an interesting time to care about sport in a way. And I think football is going through some changes, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, has it just been ruined by money, or are we going to find a new reason? I don't know. I mean, I'm waffling now. What am I trying to say? I think like I got back into football really off the back of that, because I wanted to write, basically, and I was looking for places that I could write for.
Yeah.
And the Offside Rule podcast, which is a fantastic podcast, hosted by Kate Borsay, Lindsay Hooper, and Hayley McQueen.
Yeah.
And they let me write for them, basically. And what I did was, because I was sort of getting back into football at that time after a bit of a wilderness period, they let me write a column for them, which is like the three things you need to know about what happened in the Premier League this week. So the idea was that I didn't really know that much about it, but I could give a condensed version of like three big talking points of the week that if you were going to a pub and you had to hold your own in conversation, that you could fall back on. And that was actually, I guess that was the point where it occurred to me that, a bit like all sport really, it's the taking part that counts, you know, it's not the winning. So it's kind of like, this is the point where it occurred to me that there are story arcs in the Premier League. There are like interesting, if you're not invested in the outcome of it, it's basically just like a soap opera. And that's quite fun.
Yeah.
And so that kind of gave me a reason to care about it in a way, because, you know, I'm a journalist. I'm a writer. I like stories. And there's loads of stories in football. And I think the other thing that I discovered about football at that point was there's so much humour in it. There's so much comedy in football.
Well, there we go. I hope you enjoyed it. Obviously, it's very well known about Clive Mendonca. He hopefully would have picked up quite a lot of appearance fees this week, talking about his role in one of the greatest things. But also, it was really enjoyable to talk to Jen. We always try to put together a bit of a hit list of people that we would like to speak, and Jen was on that list for a long time, and it was great. It was great to speak to her. She can be found on Twitter at InspireJen, and also the Standard Issue podcast as well. And I think she will be there at Wembley. And she's also appeared on a variety of other podcasts as well, including the brilliant Griefcast with Cariad Lloyd. I do suggest that you go and have a listen there, because I think it will speak volumes and a lot to a lot of people whose love of football comes from their family. But yeah, thanks again for listening. We hope we are back soon. We've just got irons and fires, and we're waiting for other cliches to drop as well. But yeah. Thanks very much, and see you soon.